This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new, now, and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, we tell you why Twitter is removing tweets about COVID-19.
Plus what you need to know about how Facebook is going to manage audio conversations.
Also on the show, the top Mother's Day tech for that special mom in your life.
And we tell you why you might want to go green on your next essential Uber trip.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending up.
Well, Amber, I see you've been hiking and exploring and trying to stay active as best as possible.
Yes, I think like everybody who is in a position where there's some level of stay at home or lockdown order in their city or province. Yes, we've been trying to stay outside. And Michael, I'm super excited because on next week's show, we're going to talk more about your physical and mental health 1 year later into the pandemic and really how to get back on track.
It sounds like it's going to be a great show, but it is interesting for all of our American listeners. They're starting to go back to normal and out and about and changing their regulations and moving forward quite well. So obviously in Canada and specifically in Toronto, we are still in a stay-at-home order, but it is good to see many more people getting access to vaccines and being able to get them in their arms. So hopefully we start to see far more improvement, at least where we are. That would be really, really good. But let's get to it. What are people talking about?
Okay, so we have a lot of news actually in this week's headlines about the companies that have done well during the past year. Now they are not small businesses. We know many small businesses have been struggling, but it is interesting to take a look at some of those businesses like Google, for example. There's an article in The Verge that says Google banks big in Alphabet's post-pandemic peak Q1 2021 earnings. That's just sort of fancy language to say that things are on the up and up for Google or their parent company, Alphabet.
Well, but this is interesting. And this is also a story that's a segue into the next one we're going to talk about. But this first one, what I found interesting was the comparisons to the performance during the pandemic. Now, for example, they were only hit by about a 2% decline in revenue during the pandemic. And so obviously, you know, that doesn't sound like a lot, obviously, and it isn't, but, you know, it's still quite large dollars for Google. When other people hear it, maybe it's not actually larger dollars to Google itself, if that makes sense, just because of how big they are and how much money they make. And that is, you know, trying to show this of their earnings now, you know, as you said, it's quite a lot. It's jumped dramatically and seeing a 34% increase. And, you know, a lot of the tech giants have seen, you know, their balance sheets become exceptionally healthy during the pandemic. But of course, you know, it's difficult when you look at the people who are working in certain areas aren't doing well or getting laid off. So it's still quite hard to understand and wrap your head around it when you can see these profits happening, but then seeing all these headlines of people getting laid off. So I don't know. It's a tough one.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I thought was kind of interesting with this report is that we found out how much money YouTube brings in. And we really didn't have a lot of data around this. It turns out it was a $15 billion a year business in 2020. Amazing to see just that, you know, the massive dollars that YouTube continues to bring in. And, you know, especially during times where, you know, more and more people are, of course, watching videos. So it's a good article on The Verge if you want to have a better understanding of the breakdown of just how much Alphabet made. Although if you want to avoid it, I also understand that.
Well, it is a lot of moolah for YouTube, and I wonder how much that's going into the pockets of content creators, which we're going to talk to one a little bit later in the show, who made $1 million on Snapchat, I think it was, in 6 weeks. So stay with us for that. But this next story, again, just fascinates me. So, of course, as I mentioned, while millions of people struggled to make it through the pandemic financially, of course, many of the companies hit hardest in 2020 still rewarded their executives with quite a lot of money from a compensation perspective. And there is a fantastic article in the New York Times that kind of goes through this if you're interested. And it really is hard to as I said, to wrap your head around it.
Yeah, you know, I saw a couple of people talking about this on social media in terms of what the top CEOs in the U.S. were making. And again, it's pretty alarming to see some of these companies that potentially didn't seem to do as well last year. And yet at the same time, we're still handing out bonuses like it was Halloween 2019.
You're absolutely right. And of course, like, you know, you can go on and simple things like, sorry, not simple things, but like companies, you know, would be hit hardest because they're in the travel industry, for example. So Norwegian Cruise Line, you know, we saw lots of headlines about that. You know, they barely survived the year because everything came to a standstill. And the company lost, I think it was about $4 billion and had to furlong a bunch of staff. But, you know, of course, you know, they more than doubled the pay of the CEO. And in the New York Times article, it says, you know, he, you know, got $36.4 million. So I get that they are going to compensate CEOs for weathering the storm, pardon the pun, through problems like this. But at the same time, I just wondered, and I don't know, I guess this, we'll see what other people say online to us, but, you know, 36 million, you know, maybe 50% less and use that for other, you know, aspects of propping up the business or helping those furlong staff or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people were also talking about the fact that this list is filled with, I believe it's all men at the top of these companies. So there's a bigger conversation to have here. We just have a couple of minutes left. So I wanted to talk about this one story about Twitter. According to CNN Business, Twitter has blocked some posts that were critical of the Indian government. And this is in response to those tweets being critical of how that government has been handling a brutal second wave of the coronavirus pandemic. And, you know, Michael, I think we can dive into this and talk about whether they should do this or shouldn't do it. But we do know from the article that they are reviewing these tweets in terms of the legality of these tweets. But more importantly, if we kind of zoom out a little bit and look at the picture, I mean, things are really devastating right now in India. And it's tragic to see what's going on there. And I really feel for people who have family there. Many Canadians do, of course.
And I think that's the other thing, you know, we've always say these companies don't do anything, they're slow to react. And so now they are, and they're also getting criticized. And if you do dive deeper into some of the tweets and some of the posts, you know, it's everything that we've heard before on all the platforms right from the start of, you know, urging people not to wear masks and all of this other stuff. And so it kind of goes against what people are actually, you know, trying to do, which is prevent the spread of the coronavirus. So, you know, it's a tough one, but I'm glad to see things are actually getting done. Hopefully they're not, you know, going against their own policies and they're doing the right thing and they're pulling down the right posts. But it is good to see that they're doing something. So obviously this conversation will continue for a long time, I think, as we see the social media platforms policing and you know, and moderating and regulating what goes on their platforms. But stay with us. When we return, we tell you how Uber is going green one car at a time.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, ride-hailing giant Uber is encouraging the use of electric and hybrid vehicles and has a goal to ensure all trips on the platform globally are emission-free by 2040. Now, Matt Price, the Director and General Manager of Uber Canada, is joining us now to discuss the company's sustainability targets. This is really interesting, Matt. So I guess let's start with... It's called Uber Green. So a lot of people have downloaded this app. A lot of people use Uber the service. What's different about Uber Green? How does it work and why is it important?
So Uber Green is our new low emissions ride option, which means in 16 cities across Canada, you can now go into your app, select Uber Green and actually get a hybrid or an electric vehicle for just about a dollar more than UberX. As you said, we recently made a commitment to be emission zero by 2030 in cities with supportive policies and 2040 everywhere globally. And what this is one of our first actions towards those commitments. And I actually think are the next frontier of where ride sharing is going to have a real impact at a global level. And let me explain a bit why. Gas powered vehicles, they account for about 3/4 of greenhouse gas emissions in transportation. But not all cars are created equal. Rideshare drivers use their vehicles, as you'd imagine, more than your average car owner. So if drivers on the Uber app are using electric vehicles, we actually expect to see about 3 to 4 times greater emission savings compared to your average car owner. If you think about the millions of drivers that Uber have across the globe, if even a small portion of those drivers go electric, it's going to be a huge push towards zero emission transportation. Not to mention contributing to the scale that's going to be required to bring down the cost of vehicles and increase the availability of charging. But as you and I both said there, it's not just going to be a small portion that are going to make this transition, because we've committed to be there every city in the world that we operate in by 2040.
So let's talk a little bit about the reaction from drivers. What are you hearing so far here in Canada about Uber Green?
It's a great question, Amber. And I mean, for me, this is the barometer in terms of what we're doing and the impact it's having. And I'm really happy to say that the reaction has been universally positive. The drivers that come to our platform already having an electric vehicle, for them, this is an earning opportunity. They actually earn an extra dollar on every trip they make in their electric vehicle. And for any Uber Green trip, they get half of that incremental $1 charge. Which effectively means at scale and over time, a significant earnings increase. Now I say that a half of that incremental $1 charge, because the other half is going into what we're calling the Green Future Program. And for drivers who are coming to the platform not yet in an electric vehicle, but hoping to make the transition, they're really excited about this Green Future Program, because part of that program is a commitment from Uber of $800 million to actually help hundreds of thousands of drivers go electric. And that ultimately means bringing down the total cost of ownership of electric vehicles to be closer to that of the gas-powered vehicle.
So we've talked about the goals and what you guys are trying to achieve and help improve the footprint. So what do you hope will be the actual impact this move will actually have? Obviously, I'm assuming this isn't just, you know, an Uber thing. This is a market leader thing, and you want other people to get involved and follow suit.
Well, when it comes to transportation, we admittedly, as an industry, have a lot of work to do to decarbonize. Transportation is the main cause of air pollution in most of our major cities. And it makes up, I think, about 1/4 of global carbon emissions. Now, admittedly, Uber can't do this alone. And we make up low single-digit vehicle miles traveled globally. But as I said earlier, we still think that we can have a real impact on accelerating the transition to zero emission transportation. With our scale, I think we can make a real difference when it comes to the supply chains for both vehicle and charging infrastructure. And as I mentioned earlier, when an Uber driver goes electric, it has an immediate outsized impact on electric miles in a city. But beyond Uber Green and the Green Futures program that we talked about, we're also looking at how we use our broader platform to help move towards green. And the way we're looking at it is by building a multimodal network on the app, which means not only can you get a car, perhaps you can get an e-bike or an e-scooter, you could integrate with public transit, you could even rent a car. By bringing this multimodal network to our app, we can actually promote green alternatives to the private car. And a great example here would be, recently we integrated public transit journey planning information into the app to actually help you plan your public transit journey in a way that complements, for instance, UberX. We've also integrated Lime e-bikes and scooters into the Uber app across 55 cities globally. And if you think about all of these options working together, Uber can help to create lower emissions on trips of pretty much any kind. And I personally feel that for the first time, we're able to offer, you something that is sufficiently convenient and sufficiently economical that you may be willing to forego your private car or your next private car purchase. And those private cars, they sit idle 95% of the time. The other 5%, they emit carbon emissions, often with only one person in the vehicle. So very hopeful that this move, well only a start and well only a move by Uber, can really help to get the ball rolling on this important endeavor.
One last question for you. When we talk about sustainability goals, we just celebrated Earth Day, and I was excited to do a bunch of videos for Earth Day and one around Uber Green. And I'm just curious, if we think about the time that we're in right now, how has COVID-19 impacted your plans when it comes to Uber Green, knowing many people are using Uber for those essential trips?
Firstly, happy belated Earth Day. Very, very exciting moment every year. Look, COVID-19, it hasn't just impacted our plans. I'd actually describe it as having spawned these plans. Like many other companies, the pandemic provided for Uber and for us here in Canada just a momentary pause to really think about how we can build back better. And back in 2020, when we looked out our windows, we saw cities that were just less congested. They were breathing in ways that they haven't before. And we realized this was a moment where we could reset. And we knew that the commitments we made were in line with the Government of Canada's commitments as part of the Paris Climate Agreement. We also knew that as a market leader, this is an expectation that Canadians have of us. More recently, we're really encouraged that these commitments are in line with the Government of Canada's goals to promote a green recovery and actually bring in new targets to lower emissions by 2030.
Well, listen, we just wanted to thank you so much for joining us today. As I mentioned, just on the heels of Earth Day, although every day is Earth Day on the feed on SiriusXM, we so appreciate you taking the time, Matt.
Really appreciate you having me on. Look, climate change, as we all know, is a team sport. We're really happy to be in it, and really, really looking forward to continuing to work closely with policymakers, industry partners to help us reach these targets and create a better Canada for all of us.
Thanks so much again, Matt, for joining us. Up next, we have the latest in Mother's Day tech to share memories and a whole lot more.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Wish List.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, Mother's Day is around the corner, and we have some of the latest technology for the special mom in your life to make memories, enjoy music, get help around the house, and a whole lot more. Amber, this is a super fun collection of great gift ideas. Let's start off with making some family memories.
Yeah, so this is the Aura Digital Frame, and I actually just got my hands on this. You can get it at Best Buy. And what's so cool about this, Michael, is that you're right. You can share all of those memories through this digital frame in your home. One of the things I also love about it is that it's weighted, so it will stand nicely without sort of that kickstand on the back, just the way that it's formed. It's a beautiful design, and it just allows mom to continue to be able to see all of those precious family photos, especially as so many of us are at a distance. And this is all part of the Mother's Day gift guide that's over at bestbuy.ca. So lots of other ideas, but I think it's fair to say that moms love tech and memories as well.
That's such a great idea with the weighted component that you mentioned, because it, funnily enough, on the weekend, I was trying to position a traditional, like a normal photo frame. And it was so difficult because I only had a certain space on this tiny little table. And it was a larger photo, and then angling it and moving it around was far more difficult. So that's excellent. So before we even get to a photo frame and putting all those photos in, how do we take nice photos? Because there's so many options out there at the moment.
Well, let's be honest. I think most people are taking photos on their phone. So we want to focus on that. And so I wanted to recommend the Samsung Galaxy S21 5G. A couple of things that I love about this, I also just got my hands on it. They have this incredible night mode. So you can take pictures at night that will look really crisp. Also a portrait mode. And portrait mode is always stunning, and it makes you look like a professional photographer. Of course, really easy to share these photos as well with everybody from the phone or to the digital frame. And I do want to say that the color of the phone that I am testing out right now is absolutely beautiful. And when we think about the color of it, it's called Phantom Violet. And I just mentioned this because, you know, mom wants something that takes great photos, but also looks good as well. So again, if we want really crisp photos that can be shared easily, this is a great option. Michael, I'm going to actually just jump ahead for a second too, because to go along with this, if you're looking for a second gift, you can check out the Samsung Galaxy Buds Pro, also in Phantom Violet. And this means you can have really premium sound because they have something called intelligent active noise cancellation. So that means that whether mom is listening to a podcast or perhaps on a call on her phone, it will block out some of that background noise. Michael, you've been on enough calls with me lately to know what I mean by that.
I certainly do. But what's interesting to me is the prices is pretty good too for these buds, because I've seen earbuds become quite expensive in $600-$800, like phenomenal. And also I like the fact that they're trying to have a bit more design factor into it, and a lot more offerings with colors and get a little bit more adventurous, because I think everyone wants a little bit more personalization and personality added to their devices and their accessories as well.
Yeah, they do have some great Mother's Day specials right now at Samsung. I do want to mention that if mom is in the market for a new phone, or like you mentioned, the Buds Pro, so you may want to check that out as well. So a couple of really great options, because I know sometimes it's hard to figure out what tech to buy, mom, and you don't know kind of what the latest and greatest is, but I think the photo piece of it is absolutely essential.
And it's also a kind of all-in-one. So as you said, you can listen to music and podcasts. If you get the buds, you could even do like, well, I'll give you this for Mother's Day and I'll give you the other one for Christmas. But you know what I think all moms would love? A little help around the house and other people to clean up.
Yes. So, Michael, you've been to my house enough pre-pandemic to know that I have this product and love it. It's the iRobot Braava Jet M6 Mop. Now, we've talked about the iRobot vacuum in the past, but we haven't really talked about the mop. So this is something that I use almost every single day. A few things that I absolutely love about it. I should mention that it works in terms of mopping. So that is kind of the wet mop feature, as well as dry sweeping. So that means that maybe if you have a dog like I do, it can do the dry sweeping as well. It also has something called smart mapping built in. So it gets a sense of the space that you are trying to mop. And you can actually set up keep out zones. So our dog Rusty has an area where he has his food and water. And I can set it up so that the robot mop does not go and mop there. So a ton of intelligence built in. But you know what? Most importantly, Michael, it means that all of us as moms can save time when it comes to mopping and cleaning the house, because there's just, you know, so much work that people at home are doing right now in terms of cleaning their homes, because they're at home all the time and everybody in their house
making more mess
is messy. That's my
house, the thing. Well, so do you know what fascinates me the most about this product? And it's like, regardless of the product, it's the technology, just the mapping alone capability. And I still, and I know I've said this before on the programs before, I still can't get over things that can like be a vacuum and suck stuff up and then suddenly become a mop. I know, I'm sure it's very simple and people that understand it, but like, to me, that blows my mind. And the one thing I like cleaning. I'm very clean. My apartment is spotless. I don't like mopping. I don't do it well. So this to me is a godsend. If somebody else can do it magically and do it well and hit the right spots without wrecking anything, if they can map around places I don't want them to go, this is genius.
Yeah, so exactly. I mean, and also, you know, you could get the vacuum from iRobot with the Braava Jet M6 wet mop. When it's sweeping as well, I think, like you said, that's really handy with hardwood floors. So essentially, it has these pads that you put on it, so it's sweeping, and you can throw those into the washing machine. So it just makes it easy. You can even set it up so it does that every single day if you're like Michael and you want a really clean space.
It's true. And I will watch it go around the apartment. That will be my entertainment. Now, you know, I'm starting to really start to enjoy and like and understand where a place is in our lives for a smart mirror? Because at the beginning, I was a little unsure, but I've been in a couple of hotels that have smart mirrors, and they are quite practical.
So this is a Canadian company, and I have one of these in our studio space. So this is where I do my makeup, and it's the Hilo Smart Mirror. So it's an interactive Android LED smart mirror. So that means that it's on the Android operating system. Super, super simple to set up, and you're able to do things like watch makeup videos while you're doing your makeup because it does have that beautiful lighting. So you can put it in the bathroom. You can even put it in another room in your house. So the idea is that this is just a great interactive mirror. And it is funny, you almost need to use this before you can fully experience it. So for example, when I get ready for a speaking event, I will watch music videos while I do my makeup just to kind of get the energy up. So I do love this idea that we can have a makeup mirror for mom, but also it's interactive. So you're able to do everything that an Android device could do as well.
Soak in the tub and listen to news. That's what I used to do. And I'm like, wow, the mirror has a TV. This is amazing. You know, when they start to call and tell me stuff, it's even better. Well, lots of great products, specifically in this case for mom, but clearly there are a lot on this list that lots of other people in the family would also enjoy for other special events during the year. So some great gift ideas. And Amber, we can head on over to ambermac.com for a list of these as well.
Absolutely. You can check them all out there as well as links. And I have pretty much everything on this list. So if you have any questions, please let me know.
Of course, you can let us know any apps, gadgets, products you think we should check out and include on the show to cover and let all of the listeners know. You can tweet us at Amber Mac and at AmBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag TheFeed. Coming up, we talk to a Snapchat creator who made $1 million in 6 weeks.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Power Friend.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Do content creators have career longevity on social platforms like TikTok and Snapchat? Well, Katie Feeney is one of the most popular content creators who just made $1 million on Snapchat in a mere 6 weeks. Well, first of all, Katie, congratulations and thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about your origin story in terms of being a content creator. How did that all start?
Yeah, it started off like about 5 years ago as just something I would do for fun with my friend, as every teenager does. And over time, especially over this past year, I've been able to make money from it, and I've gotten lots of brand deals, and I've worked with tons of different companies. So it's gone from a fun activity hobby with my friends to a career.
And that's really interesting, because something that started off as fun has become quite serious. So how do you still balance the enjoyment and doing it, you know, in your off time to now? I mean, you know, you have to build a schedule around it. You have to be very careful how and what you put out there. And you're starting, I imagine, thinking about your content differently.
Right. Yeah. So it takes up a lot of time, but because I love it and I love creating content and it's a really big passion of mine, I'm lucky that I have a job that I enjoy. But you know, I am still in high school. I'm a senior in high school. So it definitely has been challenging balancing time. So I've had to work on optimizing my minutes, and going into college next year, I'm going to have to keep thinking about the different ways I can balance it all.
So what recommendations do you have for people? Because I know a lot of people, especially over the past 12 months, have been spending more time trying to create content and really create that content that has that sticky quality. What would you say to people who are wondering how to achieve that?
I think the number one thing is finding what works with your audience. So I've had to try a lot of different things. And the reason I've gotten much more popular over this past year is because I found my specialty, which is unboxings. And that's not the only thing I do. But once I found what really sells and what draws people in, I was able to build on it. So I think just finding what clicks and what makes people want to follow you and continue watching your content, that's what will eventually let you earn money from it.
It's so interesting how you create content and or interact over your different platforms. how difficult is it to create content specifically for the different platforms? Because, for example, TikTok, you've got millions of followers, and that seems to be a really powerful platform. But then if you look at some of the others, you know, they're still doing well, but nowhere near as well as TikTok.
Right. So TikTok is definitely the platform I started on. And I think that it's the easiest platform to grow on because there's a For You page. So any video can go viral. Instagram has definitely been probably the most challenging for me along with YouTube. Instagram with Instagram Reels, all these platforms are starting to go towards that short form content. So that Instagram Reels has really helped me grow and I'm up to 300K on Instagram now. And with Snapchat, I grew very fast on Snapchat with the help of Snapchat Spotlight, which is their short form video feature within Snapchat. And that's the platform I've earned the most money on. So it's funny because even though it's not my largest following, that's been the most money I've earned, more money than I could ever imagine in a million years.
Well, we have to give Snapchat some credit because they have been pushing lately to make sure that they are sharing their revenue with creators. So I love to hear that. One question I do have for you is that we have a lot of parents who listen to the show and they may be worried because their kids are saying, hey, you know, I saw this creator who's now making $1 million. I want to quit school and pursue this. What would you say to those parents in terms of advice for their children to pursue their passion of content creation, but also continue to stick with education as well?
Yeah. And I think that like for me, I'm a social media creator, but I am still going to school. I'm going to Penn State next year. And education is really important to me to continue my knowledge on how to run a business. And with creating an LLC recently, I need to expand my knowledge on that. So I think that you definitely can do both. And I would suggest that let your kids create content, monitor it. My parents always monitored my content. I'm very family friendly. My content's clean. And now I'm going to go to college. So it's definitely possible to do both. And I mean, it's a career now, and I think it's a respectable career. So yeah, you can do both.
I love the fact that you just laid out, well, I'm going to school and I'm going to learn X, Y, Z and learn how to be in control and understand my business. And I think that's probably the most important lesson here, that you've turned a passion into a career, but you're also not leaving it for somebody else to work out. You're understanding it yourself. Was that something that you'd always wanted to do, be in business or work for yourself? Or has this kind of evolved over time?
It's definitely evolved over time. I think that I didn't really realize that social media was like able to become a career and a job until recently when I started making a lot of money from it. So I think now just over the past couple years, I've wanted to create a business and I want to learn a lot more about marketing, but also about film and just a whole bunch of other things that could help me go like going into my content. And if social media, I mean, there's no guarantee it will last forever. I think that it will last a very long time and hopefully just continue to expand. But if it doesn't, then I'll have a degree to always fall back on.
Well, it sounds like you definitely have a path forward in terms of the business side. So I know it's really difficult, especially in these times, to predict where things are going to be 5-10 years down the road. But as you go off to college and you continue to monetize your social media platforms, what is kind of that ultimate dream job for you or dream business that you may want to start down the road?
So as long as I can keep doing what I'm doing now, that would be awesome. I'm working really closely with Amazon. I've been doing these Amazon Lives. I mean, maybe one day I'll be on TV as a show host or selling products on TV. That would be really cool. Maybe I'll be a news host. Who knows? But there's definitely a lot of different opportunities that can come from what I'm doing. But as long as I can continue making content and earning money from it, I will continue this job as long as possible because I love it.
It's so good to hear. I love the passion and the positivity. What's the biggest lesson you've learned personally from this experience?
I think being in high school, the biggest obstacle for me was kind of getting past all of the opinionated people, and a lot of people didn't necessarily support me and still don't. So I think it was once I realized that as long as I love what I'm doing, that's the only thing that mattered, I was able to really put in all of my time and effort into it, because I did receive a lot of, I guess, hate and a lot of negativity from people at school But I mean, other than that, I think once I got past it, yeah, it's been smooth sailing since then.
So if we think about the best place for young people to go to learn about creating content, are there any tips that you have for them or people that they should follow that have really inspired you and helped you over the past few months and years?
I mean, they can definitely look at my content if you're looking for more of like the family-friendly content. I'm constantly exploring and looking at different YouTubers and scrolling through my For You page for inspiration. And I think really just I look at creators that do brand deals and that work closely with brands. So there's too many to name, but any creator that I guess they would see doing a brand deal or working with a company, those are definitely the ones to follow because those are the people that are successful with social media.
Well, listen, we want to thank you so much for joining us today. And we are so happy for you. Congratulations on all of your success. And thanks for being a great model for the next generation.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Up next, how to watch your favorite movies with people in other homes.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the Spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, we found out about our next guest's company from a tweet by Kathy Buckworth, who let us know she is using Sina for her and her daughter to watch rom-com movies with each other while they aren't living together at the moment. So we tracked down the CEO of Sina, Daniel Strickland, and he's joining us now. It's such a pleasure to talk to you, Daniel. Let's start with Sina and the platform. What specifically is it? How does it work?
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. So Sina is a watch party platform that lets audiences big and small watch streaming TV and movies together in sync over video chat. So you can have a movie night with your friends anytime, and it feels like you're all sitting on the couch together watching a movie. We support over 10 of the major streaming services, such as Netflix, Disney, HBO Max, Hulu, and more. And it's just a really fun experience.
So I think people love this idea, and I know there have been some other platforms or tools that have allowed people to do similar things, but I like the idea that you work across the streaming services. Can you describe a little bit how people do this? Because it may seem obvious to you, but just wondering in terms of the experience, is it watching it on a phone or a tablet, on a computer, on a TV? What does the scene look like, no pun intended, when people are using Sina?
Sure. So Sina is a free app for your computer or a laptop. So you can just go to Sina.com, the website, and you download it. It works on Chrome and it's free to use. And it's really easy to install and use. And then when you're using it, it sort of looks like the video chat calls that we're all familiar with, where you have sort of the little squares that are the people on the call talking. But then most of the screen is taken up with the Netflix movie or the Disney Plus show that you're watching. And then Sina does all the work to keep everybody in sync. So everybody is watching the same thing at the same time. And if you pause it, it pauses for everybody. If you fast forward, it fast forwards for everybody. And then you can all text chat or you can video chat all at the same time.
What kind of engagement has the platform experienced during the pandemic? And are there any insights that you've been able to gain from people's viewing over the past year?
Oh, yeah. Well, so, you know, closing movie theaters and locking everyone in their homes was a big boom for Sina. And so we've experienced 44% growth quarter over quarter since last year. We just passed 1.6 million active installs using Sina. So it's been a really exciting, while difficult, but exciting for Sina last couple months. As far as insights, you know, we see everything from best friends doing this nightly because they're binge watching shows, to long distance couples, to family members that are apart, maybe a child went away to college, to groups of friends. And then we also see, larger audiences, you know, people doing sort of film screenings or large watch parties for movie premieres. And so it's been exciting to see how the community has really, taken to this.
I really want to talk a little bit more about stories that you've heard because, you know, I know Kathy, so I just pictured that experience for her, and I know how important family is for her. But I would just love to hear about some of the stories that you've heard where people who can't be together were brought together by Senior. Is there anyone that stands out for you?
Yes. You know, so we get emails every week about people telling us how they're using Senior and how thankful they are for it. And especially sort of the height of lockdown, we got a lot of those. The ones that really stood out to me were the birthday parties for young children, because, you know, elementary age kids who, you know, were having birthdays that are traditionally, you know, really important, you know, times and moments for them. They couldn't be together with their friends. And this wasn't our idea. We users were emailing us and telling us that they were doing this, where they were having movie nights as birthday parties for their children, where they would invite friends and the kid would pick a movie. And they would all sort of watch it together, and they'd all eat popcorn sort of separately in their own homes. And that was really, you know, I have young children, and that was really touching to me because I have, you know, see firsthand how we all struggled through that period.
And so what's next? What kind of features are you looking at adding to the platform? And what does the next 12 to 24 months look like?
Yeah, so we are really excited to expand Senior to different devices beyond just computers and laptops. So we are working on bringing Senior to mobile phones, to tablets, and to connected smart TVs so that you can watch with your friends or with others, you know, on whatever screen you want to watch on.
So for anyone who's listening right now, and I'm sure there are lots of people who are super excited to start using this, I want to just talk about long-term where Senior goes down the road, knowing that a lot of people are at home, but in some places, of course, that's changing and people are getting back to sort of more of a normal life where they can be face-to-face. What do you see as the evolution of Senior?
Yeah, so we are, you know, right now most of our usage is small groups of friends or family watching movies and TV shows together using Senior. But we have been expanding into enabling larger groups to have watch parties. And that might be, you know, a large group of friends, or it might be a whole community that's the fan club around a particular movie or particular genre. We've been partnering with a number of different services like HBO Max, like Comic-Con San Diego to host large movie premiere watch parties or entire film festivals, where we're bringing thousands of people together to all watch a movie together at the same time, all synced up and chatting. And that has been really exciting. We did a event a few weeks ago with HBO Max with the premiere of the Zack Snyder version of Justice League. And we had nearly 30,000 people all watching together this movie while the director sort of gave sort of behind the scenes sort of commentary while everyone was watching it. And that was just a really exciting, sort of energizing experience to be in.
Well, listen, we want to thank you so much for joining us today. A shout out to Kathy as well for putting Senior on our radar.
Thanks, Kathy.
And yeah, great job. If you want to check it out, it's senior.com. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Up next, we try to figure out how Facebook is going to monitor and manage audio conversation.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking, and this week we're going to talk about live audio. Now, we have talked about Clubhouse clones before on the show, whether or not they're going to make it. There are clones out there like Twitter Spaces. Also, Facebook is introducing some more live audio features. But the question is, how is Facebook going to moderate audio? This is a question that came up in a Mashable article that I was just reading, and I thought it was a really good point because we know that Facebook relies on algorithms to amplify content or demote content. So what's going to happen when, in fact, they can't moderate audio as easily, even though some tech does exist? I'm going to bring both Aaron and Michael into this. Michael, let's start with you. What do you think of this?
Well, my first question is, why isn't this the first thing that comes up when Clubhouse launched? Whereas when Facebook goes to launch, the first thing people go to is, well, how are you going to moderate it because you're terrible at it? That's kind of where it goes. And so because moderating any content, no matter whether it's audio or messages, text on social platforms, it's a problem for all platforms. And I don't think any one platform has really worked it out to the degree that they need to, just given how big their platforms are and how difficult a task it is.
I think that's fair. Aaron, have you done anything on Clubhouse or Twitter Spaces? I mean, you're the audio pro among all of us. What do you think of this trend, and is moderation important?
Moderation is important, and I guess it's just like the question is, things are live. How do people moderate Instagram Lives or Facebook Lives when people, when those were happening a little more? IG Live is still happening a lot. I have kind of backed off from Clubhouse, and I've noticed I've been removing notifications from so many users that I follow that I'm very close to deleting the app, because I kept getting pop-ups. This person's going live. This person's going live. And I would say, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. And so now I'm close to deleting the app. On the other hand, I've been listening in on more Twitter Spaces and finding that a bit of a better experience. First and foremost, you don't have to create a new ID, a new profile picture, create a new follow list, get new followers. If you're on Twitter, that's already there. But also, as a sports fan, I found that Twitter Spaces happening right after a game ends is such a great immediate experience. And yes, there's always a podcast discussing that sport, but then the chat room, the chat happens right there, right away, as soon as the final whistle is blown, with guests and experts and fans listening. It's a great experience. So I haven't had to run into any moderation issues because I've been joining rooms based on a sport. I haven't been joining any rooms based on a political topic or a political party or anything much more divisive than a sport. So it is tough, and I feel like it's going to be one of these things where the horse leaves the barn before we figure out how to close the barn door, and something catastrophic is going to happen, and then they're going to figure out how to do it on all the voice chat platforms.
I was going to say, Amber, that's my question, because it's like, I think that's the difficult thing, right? Audio content is much harder to moderate than generic social media, where that stuff can be easily moderated through algorithms and picking up words and hashtags.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there are software that can kind of scrape live video or audio conversations, but I would argue that are they able to do that in time before something happens? I mean, it isn't the first time that Facebook has faced this challenge. We did have this conversation in the early days of Facebook Live, because unfortunately there were examples of things happening that were live streams that were just horrendous. I remember one in particular where a person, I believe, was murdered live. And of course, Facebook had to react as quickly as possible. So it's not as though Facebook probably isn't ready for this. It's just that they don't often hire enough humans to potentially deal with the magnitude of this problem. That's what I would really worry about, is them building in the tools to make sure that moderating was possible, and you know, maybe even hosting privileges were taken away if there were issues. So I don't know. I mean, I think this whole space of live audio is just kind of messy right now, guys, quite frankly.
I think you're right. And I mean, even if you look at Clubhouse, I have seen a couple of reports where it didn't seem like safety and respect for people from different communities, different backgrounds were at the center of when they created the app. And what I mean by that is, from the very start, they're thinking about, well, how do we moderate if things go sideways, if there's hate speech, if there's things being attached to people. And again, the features within the app, you know, how are you able to report live if things are happening or you're being attacked or hate speech? And so I do remember that Clubhouse did actually say that, you know, they're going to be adding some more features. But to me, it's like, you should have them already. And I think that's at least Facebook, you know, they've got a history and they've experienced it across their different features on the platform. So they should be more prepared than other people, I would think, because they have all of that data and all of that experience prior of how to manage and moderate in other avenues on the platform.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I will also add that, oh my goodness, I just feel as though people are going to have to be so careful out there. I mean, with so much live streaming capability with audio on our phones, I mean, I think that this is ripe for potential issues. Imagine sort of confidential meetings in government, you know, the potential to live stream them. Unlike video, where you do have to have the camera pointed at people, with audio, you can simply put your phone on a table. So I just want everybody who I know to know that we are going to turn our phones off next time we meet. Because
100%. It's like, and I think that's a scary thing. You don't want to live in a society where you're always on or could be always on. And I mean by being recorded, being watched, being listened to. Like, no one wants that.
Exactly. All right. Well, Michael and Aaron, thank you so much for your comments. But we do also want to know what people who are listening think of this. They can find us online at Amber Mac and at mbancroft80. And of course, please use the hashtag The Feed.
This is The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.